Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined by Paul Zeiss for our weekly Zeiss is Right video here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel. Paul, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, Adam. I can't complain at all. It's actually freezing cold in this room, so I feel like I'm in, like in the movie Rocky, where he's fighting the meat in the meat locker. That's kind of where I feel like right now, the meat hanging on the hook. To be punched.
We got to get you out in the sun, Paul. It's a pretty nice day out there. So before we get into anything else, I want to just let you know what we're going to talk about on today's episode. Arthur Smith, the hiring by the Steelers, him as the new offensive coordinator, been unpopular in a lot of circles. Want to get Paul Zeiss's reaction to the reaction. Also just Paul's thoughts on the hiring in general. Then we're going to talk about the offensive staff and, you know, what does this hiring mean for various other personnel groups and the direction the Steelers might go this offseason. Get into a little Pirates, a little Pit Hoops, maybe a little bit of Penguins if we have time. Before we get started, just want to remind you that this episode and every episode of our Steelers podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, the Arthur Smith hire, I don't think is broadly popular. I've seen some people praise it. I've seen especially industry people say he can do a good job in Pittsburgh. I think the average fan social media reactions I've tracked, the comments of these videos here on our Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, I'd say they're mostly negative. What's your reaction to the reaction so far?
Here's the thing, Adam. I think we should back up a little bit, and this is why the reaction was what it was. We in this town now have about 75 blogs, blogs or websites devoted to covering the Steelers. And all of them, because it's such a competitive market, have to find ways to generate content, right? That's what you do now. You have to, every single little thing, you blow it up into a headline and you tweet it out and you hope that a bunch of people and you get hits and all that other stuff. And that crowd universally was going on and on and on about a young, up-and-coming, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan protege, someone with a real, advanced knowledge of analytics in the passing game and all that other stuff, right? There's the Bobby Slowicks of the world. What was his name? Cam Robinson, was that his name? The guy from the Rams, those kind of guys. That's what everybody or many people had in their mind, that this is what we're going to get. Even though, and this is what I said when he was hired the other day, even though Mike Tomlin made it very clear, he wanted to hire an experienced guy, somebody who had experience, who was a play caller, right? And also somebody that still fit with the philosophy of what the Steelers are trying to do. I mean, the only reason all these people had in their minds that they were going to get this young up-and-comer is because this is what was written about, ad nauseum. Oh, they're going to go out and get the Bobby Slowick type. They got to get this guy. They got to get that guy. Okay, the Cam Robinson or whatever. But the problem is, if you read and you listen to what the Steelers had to say, Arthur Smith makes a lot of sense. Okay. I don't know if he's going to do a good job or a bad job. I'm not, you know, if I knew that, Adam, I'd be in Vegas living large. I can't see the future. I can't be that guy. But here's what I'm going to tell you. Okay. Number one, background is a what? A tight ends, offensive line kind of guy. His best years as an offensive coordinator were what? Running the ball 2,000 yards with Derrick Henry. He's a play-action kind of guy, which means he's not going to ask the quarterback to make a lot of throws he can't make. Doesn't that sound like exactly what you're looking for if you're going to be – if you're the Steelers, unless you're willing to blow up your philosophy and say we're going to go get a new quarterback, isn't that sort of the guy, the profile, the guy that you want? Now, again, I'm not saying he's going to do a good job. I'm saying that all the disappointment that you hear, the anger, the outrage, all that stuff is based on people who had a preconceived idea or notion that they were going to get the young, you know, up-and-coming analytics guy that is really good in the passing game. I think Arthur Smith, you got Kenny Pickett to deal with, okay? And let's face it, Kenny Pickett is a guy who what? He probably is not a guy you want throwing 45 times, right? He's a guy you probably want throwing 20 to 25 times. He's probably a guy that you want to make sure that many of the throws he's going to make are easy throws, play action throws, right? Down the field, just kind of play action throws where you freeze the defense and you're thrown to a kind of an open guy. You've got two running backs. You're probably going to go draft at least one offensive lineman. You want to grind it and pound it and, you know, have your two running backs add up to 2,000, 2,200 yards, something like that. I mean, Arthur Smith seems fine to me. I know people were angry about what he did in Atlanta. He had Desmond Ridder. And what's the other guy's name? The kid from the Washington Commanders. What's his name? I can't even think of his name. He peeped for Heineke, right? Taylor Heineke.
Yeah.
I mean, and before that, didn't he have Marcus Mariota? I mean, what are we talking about? So all I'm saying, Adam, is I probably am a lot less down on the hiring than many people, because I believe that it's on brand for the Steelers. It's exactly what you know, I thought they were going to end up with at the end of this. It probably is actually a little better than I, because I had, you know, visions of them going out and finding some 65-year-old kind of guy. So the fact that they got a 41-year-old who's a head coach, who's got experience, who is still pretty young and probably has some good, you know, newer ideas, I'm okay with it until, you know, I'm not okay with it. At this point, I just have to see what it's going to develop into.
Do you think some of it's his personality, Paul? Because I think that's my big read is that he is kind of this even keel, not very flashy like personality. And I think a lot of people watch that quarterback documentary on Netflix. The Marcus Mariota storyline included a lot of Arthur Smith. And I don't think he came off as particularly charming or engaging. To what degree do you think that is shaping people's view, as opposed to if he was charismatic and, you know, kind of like a Todd Haley type?
Well, I think that's a part of it. I think, you know, but again, it's funny you say that, because one of the most viral videos that I saw this week among Steeler fans was when Arthur Smith wanted to fight who's the Saints coach? What's his name? The Saints.
Dennis Allen, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. At midfield, Arthur Smith wanted to fight him because he thought he ran up to score. And it turned out Jameis Winston was just being Jameis Winston. At the end of the day, that's the video. People are like, oh, this is the energy we want. But I agree. I mean, here's the thing. It's not a splashy hire. In many ways, it's kind of a safe hire. It's kind of a hire that just is sort of a safe hire that is sort of on brand for the Steelers. And so that's what I think is really, you know, a part of it. You know, and part of it is his personality, but I think that's part of it, Adam, is that people had expectations for X and they're getting Y.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, I think at least on this channel, we were kind of talking about, well, these are the criteria. This guy, how much does he check this and how much does this seem like, you know, they're trying to get some guys in the Rolodex, get some relationships built through the interview process. But you know, you get the impression that this is kind of the direction that they wanted to go. Paul, now that he's in place, I think there's a lot of questions about A, the staff, and then B, the personnel, and what does this mean for different groups of people. So I'm just going to run down the list. I'm going to start with the coaching staff. Jerry Dulac has reported that there will be no Mike Munchak return. He is like one of the favorite hobby horses of Steelers fans, I think. Like when we talk about this guy all the time, and like he did a good job here, but it's amazing how every time there's any, really any time in any offseason, Mike Munchak. He's not coming back. A, do you have any reaction to that? And B, you know, any reaction to the fact that it seems like there probably won't be a lot of turnover in the rest of the staff? Because I know that's something you and I have talked about, is trying to, if you're going to go with a hire like this, build the coaching staff up a little bit, bring in some analysts, bring in some guys who, you know, can kind of fill that role that people want of giving them a little bit of excitement, have some connection to the Sean McVay type trees. What are your thoughts just generally on the whole coaching staff?
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The first thing is the Munchak thing. When he retired or whatever he did with the Steelers and took the job in Denver, he did so because he wanted to be closer to his family. So every time Munchak, every time his name comes up, I say, did the Steelers move? Did the Steelers move to west of the Mississippi and I didn't know it? Is that what happened? Because at the end of the day, the guy doesn't want to come back here. So I just dismissed it. But again, when you have 75 of these blogs and websites that are committed to trying to crank out Steeler news, this is the kind of stuff that happens. So that's number one. Number two, I think they're going to miss on an opportunity if this is the only move that they make. Mike Sullivan, okay, he did a reasonable job in a tough situation as an interim coach. Eddie Faulkner, I get it, right? But if we're going to complain about quarterback development, who is the quarterback's coach over the last few years? Right?
Yeah.
Also, one of the criticisms of Arthur Smith is, you know, I don't know that he's great at developing quarterbacks. Okay. That tells me go out and get a quarterback guy. Get a quarterback guru, right? And, of course, this being Pittsburgh, the only name that comes to mind, Mark Whipple, because he worked with, you know, Kenny at Pitt. But I'm sure there are other guys out there that could be your quarterback guru. As far as Eddie Faulkner and Mike Sullivan, I think it's really difficult when you elevate guys and then make them go back to their roles for that to work. Like, I think that Arthur Smith should be able to bring in his own running backs coach. And I think that, honestly, there was never an opening at offensive line coach. But I think that Arthur Smith should be able to sit down with what's his name? Sean Meyer, is that his name? The offensive line coach of the Steelers. They should be able to sit down with him and essentially interview him. And if he's not convinced that, you know, they're compatible, he should be able to go hire a guy. I mean, that's the toughest thing about this. If you're just going to basically take Arthur Smith and like drop him down into the middle of the staff that already exists and say, this is what you have to work with, I don't think you're setting him up to succeed. And I know it's Mike Tomlin's team and all this other stuff. Wonderful. You hired a guy to run your offense. You run the defense. We all know that. You hired a guy to run your offense. Let him bring in some of his own guys. Okay, that doesn't mean he should blow up the entire thing, but the offensive line coach is an important coach because the offensive line coach has to be on the same page with the offensive coordinator, because you can't run an offense if you're not on the same page as your offensive line. You just can't. So you have to make sure that they're compatible. And if they're not, Arthur Smith needs to say, listen, you know what? I need to be able to hire my own offensive line coach. The same thing with the quarterback's coach. I'm the offensive coordinator. I need somebody that's going to work with Kenny Pickett, somebody that I trust, somebody I know. And I know I don't want the guy who was calling plays last year. I don't want him. I just don't. That's just me, right? Faulkner, I could go either way, because he kind of was just sort of the, you know, in name only coordinator. But to me, and obviously the running backs coach to me isn't as important as the offensive line coach. But to me, I would say, you know, do you really want a guy that just had the job going back to do the, I'm not a big fan of that. I've never been a big fan of that. My thing is, if you're going to go in a different direction, go in a different direction. It always drives me crazy. You know, when you see these coaches that get fired because, well, we're going to go in a different direction. And then they really, you know, they don't go in a different direction. It's like, well, if you're going to promote someone from the staff, that's not a different direction. Okay. And that's not, you know, I don't want guys losing their jobs and getting fired. My thing is, if you really look at what happened this year and how bad the offense has been for 2 years, if you're just going to drop a new coordinator in the middle of it all, I don't know that you're really giving yourself the best chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, there's more to being the offensive coordinator than play calling, Paul. And I think that was a big source of my frustration with the Matt Canada hire. It just wasn't – things looked disjointed. They did not look coordinated. I mean, that's in the title. And they didn't seem especially well coached, beyond the fact that, yes, there were some head-scratching play calls. But, you know, I think that's true of many offensive coordinators, many good offensive coordinators. When it doesn't work, it doesn't look good. But the how many illegal motion penalties did they have? How many illegal man downfield penalties did they have? That is the stuff that should get cleaned up. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that should land on an offensive line coach, right?
Absolutely.
That's the way I look at it. Paul, I want to talk about some other – specifically the player personnel and what this hire could signal about where the Steelers want to go. I think I want to start with Najee Harris. He's coming up on the decision. Are they going to exercise his fifth-year option? Are they going to give him an extension? Can you hire Arthur Smith and not give him a feature back past next season, possibly? I think this signals that you know that Najee Harris is going to be here for a while.
They're definitely going to give him the fifth-year option. They're definitely going to give him the fifth-year option. And then probably next year at this time, they're going to decide whether or not they might even give him another year or two after that. I think there's no question. I think they've made that pretty clear. I think if you read the reporting of all the guys that cover the Steelers for us, I think it's all pretty clear. So I feel like that's an important thing that, hey, Najee Harris is going to be our guy at least for the next 2 years. And probably – you know, they might even try to pull what they did with Le'Veon Bell and maybe not sign him, but try and transition tag or franchise tag him or whatever and see if they can get a sixth year out of him as well. But, you know, it's all going to depend on his production and his health and all that other stuff. I will say this. These last two seasons, we've seen when Najee Harris plays well, the Steelers are a different offense. When Najee Harris is running angry and all that other stuff, they're a different offense. So now you've got a guy who comes in and kind of understands that. I think you're 100% correct, Adam. There's no question that Najee Harris will be back for his fifth-year option. They're going to pick it up, and it might even be a sixth year after that.
Well, I'd argue too, Paul, that, you know, I'd give him the extension now. If we're just going to talk about five-year, six, I think you run the risk of, if this works how it's supposed to, And if Derrick Henry is the prototype, right, and that's right, what you want Najee Harris to be, then don't you just want to lock those 2 years up and not have to pay? Because that's what happened with Le'Veon Bell. The production was there the whole time. They had to pay for the production. I don't think that Najee Harris has produced enough that right now he can demand Le'Veon Bell money. But maybe he gets to that place in an offense that really features him in a way that allows him to shine.
Yeah, I mean – I think one of the things the Steelers have demonstrated, though, is they are really, really, really careful about locking themselves up with a running back beyond, you know, maybe 6 years, if you know what I mean. Like, after the fifth or sixth year, I think there's a lot of studies that suggest that running backs lose, lose something. I think the Steelers have tried really hard to, with respect to Le'Veon Bell, for instance, they've tried really hard to keep it within that first 6 years of their career and then say, okay, you know what, we're either going to pay you year by year like they tried to do with the tags. But the other part of it is they did offer Le'Veon Bell a five-year deal. I don't think they can do that with Najee Harris. He would have to have one hell of a year next year before they offered him that kind of deal, I think. I actually like the fifth-year option because I think it gives you a little bit more control for one more year without really, really locking up, a huge financial interest in the guy.
Yeah, I can see that too. There's definitely risk when you're talking about running backs, and it's not easy. But I think if the general plan is you want him here for the next 3 years at least, I think the cheapest way to get there is to lock him up now rather than trying to go year to year. But you're right. The running backs are kind of a dime a dozen, and when the tread comes off, they're done. And so, I get the resistance as well, especially from a guy who hasn't been particularly explosive, and you'd basically be paying for upside and not – necessarily, proven track record that he could be a Derrick Henry type. Paul, you and I talk a ton about receivers on this show. We talked about it in the summer. We talked about it all season. Now we're seeing the screenshots of Drake London and some other guys who were playing receiver under Arthur Smith, whose numbers were terrible. We know A.J. Brown, who's put up huge numbers in Philly, was in that Titans offense and never really kind of broke out the way people thought he was capable of under Arthur Smith. Do you think this signals that the Steelers are not going to make many big changes at receiver because that's not really his emphasis, and that's not really what he looks for, is adding more explosiveness to that mix? Because I honestly, Paul, I look at it and say, you got Calvin Austin, you got George Pickens, you got Deontay Johnson. That sounds like all he really would want, and I don't think they're going to be running a whole lot of five receiver sets.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
No, but they better go out and get another guy because they're not good enough at that position. You can't go through a season with three guys, especially when one of them's Calvin Austin, who I think can be okay, but I don't know that he's much more than just okay. You've got – and, again, I don't count the Allen Robinsons and the Miles Boykins and the guys that fill in the back end of your roster, your receiver roster. I don't count any of those guys. You need to have four guys, I think. And I'm not saying four guys like, capital G, like you got to have four stars, but you have to have four receivers that are capable of being really productive, capable of playing, and a couple of them are capable of playing. And one of them has to be a burner. And when I say a burner, somebody that stretches the field, regardless of what it is that you're trying to do on offense, if you don't have that guy to make at least the defense think about, okay, this guy could go deep. And I know Pickens is that, but really, he's that, that's about it. That's really what all they have in terms of guys that scare you. And quite frankly, we saw most teams weren't scared of even that. So my point there is, I think I don't care what your philosophy is, you better have four receivers, right? The Steelers have two and a half. We'll say Calvin's a half. They better go out and get a receiver. The interesting thing is, you're probably going to come up to, are you going to ask me about tight ends?
Yeah, I was going to get to Pat Freiermuth. Are we going to see that extension? That was going to be the question.
So anyway, my point with that is to get back to receivers, you need to have four receivers. And you better go out and get somebody, you know, and not another Allen Robinson type who, you know, I say the third and seven guy that can get you 7.5 yards and catch the ball and fall down. We don't need another guy like that. If you want to keep Allen Robinson around, that's fine. Boykin, I don't care about receivers 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't care about those guys. You've got Pickens, you've got Deontay Johnson, you maybe have Calvin Austin, and that's not enough. So I say they better go get a receiver, and they better go get somebody who can help them win games.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how they approach that philosophically, just because some of those numbers are pretty scary, and you know, they're scary for the number one and number two guy. It makes you wonder, what's the fourth receiver going to do in this offense? I think that's an open question. Paul, we already led into the tight end question, so I'll just ask you there. Do you think this assures that there's a Pat Freiermuth extension coming as well?
It's a tricky one, Adam. That's a tricky one. He's not a great blocker, and he gets hurt a lot. Because he would be another one they'd be talking about the fifth-year extension, right? No.
No, he's not a first-rounder, yeah.
Pick, yeah. So he wouldn't even get the – they would have to give him a straight extension. That might actually be easier, Adam. I think I'd be willing to give him a 2-year extension or a 3-year extension at the right money if I'm the Steelers. I was actually thinking wrong because I was like, well, if they have to give him a 5th-year extension, they'd have to pay him a ton of money, and I don't know. Actually, I think I would offer him – I might offer him a 2-year deal. Say, listen, maybe a 2-year deal with some sort of an option for a third, right? Because the thing is, when he's healthy, he's reasonably productive. He can be a weapon for you. And obviously, with Arthur Smith, if you're a tight end, you're going to be a part of it. And I know they've got Darnell Washington, but at the end of the day, we're probably going to see them add another tight end in this offseason, I would think. So the thing about it would be the money. And I think Freiermuth would probably take a little less money to stay here as opposed to going elsewhere. So I think, you know, if you could get him for the right price, even though I know he's been injury prone, I would probably do it given the fact that Arthur Smith likes those 2 and 3 tight end sets.
Paul, we already have talked about the quarterbacks a lot. Has anything changed in that regard for you in terms of this is going to be Kenny Pickett's team probably? I know I've seen some angry people in the comments saying, why are you assuming it's going to be Kenny Pickett? It's because everything they've said and done to this point in the offseason, Paul, suggests that's the tone to me.
Well, again, they've said, it's like nobody listens to these people. You know what I mean? These people don't listen to what's actually said. Mike Tomlin essentially said, it's Kenny Pickett's job. Oh, we're going to have an open competition, but it's Kenny Pickett's job. Sure, we'll have compete. We always believe in competition, but it's Kenny Pickett's job. He must, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I don't know what we're talking about here. I simply said, if you're going to give the job to Kenny Pickett and he's your first round pick, if you're going to give it to him, that's fine. You have to move on from Mason Rudolph. You cannot have him here and go through an entire summer where every time Kenny Pickett throws an interception or throws an incomplete pass or has a bad practice or Mason Rudolph looks good, you risk dividing your locker room. You risk all the discussions about, well, half the guys want Mason Rudolph, right? You bring in somebody new. Of course, the new name is Ryan Tannehill because of his connection with Arthur Smith. I don't care who it is. Bring in somebody new so that it's, okay, he's coming in to compete, but guess what? The locker room's familiar with Kenny. They're going to rally behind Kenny and give him every opportunity to be successful. At the end of the day, if you bring Rudolph back, you're bringing back a distraction that you probably don't need.
Paul, last question before we get into some other topics, with the other teams in town. Does this change your view of free agency or the draft at all? And you know, things that you thought they might emphasize before, now they might emphasize something different, given that there's such a clear signal of their intentions to, you know, be a team that runs the football really well?
Well, I think there's no question now they're going to go get it. Well, they were going to get a center anyway, right? I mean, their center is not good enough. There's no. I think they're going to probably go try and get another offensive lineman, Adam, and probably another tight end. I mean, they're going to, you know, they're going to try and build up their big heavy sets. The only way you do that is get tight ends and offensive linemen. So to me, if you look at it that way, that's what they're going to do. Defensively, I don't think it changes much defensively, but offensively, I think it probably means they're, you know, they're going to prioritize it more than a center, probably another guard or tackle, and probably go get another, at least one more tight end. And that's, you know, I hope that they don't go further than that. You know, they already got Connor Hayward, who's like an H-back fullback kind of player. I hope they don't go further than that to try and create jumbo packages. But I think they'll add two offensive linemen and a run and a tight end, no doubt.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch that play out. Paul, we're going to talk about the Pirates a little bit here. Before we do, just want to thank Pitt Johnstown for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. It's Pitt Quality Education with up-close and personal learning, a top-ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News and World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres, easy access to the city center, shopping and dining, vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Paul, you retweeted my tweet, and so about Kenan Smith and Jigba kind of going out like Stan Chera, I said, just very quietly. It's you know, whenever it's on the broadcast, Greg Brown is, you know, puts on the Greg Brown voice and says, "These young bucks," and you know, every time they get like a double, and this is, here's the future, we're watching it now. And then whenever one of these guys that they propagandize us with gets unceremoniously dumped for Aroldis Chapman, there's only like a couple people talking about it on Twitter. None of the prospect guys who tell us that, you know, the bright days are right around the corner and Kenan Smith and Jigba is going to be leading them. You know, they're talking about the guy in A-ball. They're not saying, "Oh, I was wrong about this guy," or, you know, are you sick of this? I'm sick of it.
Yeah. I mean, but it's par for the course, isn't it? It's par for the course. So to me, I mean, the thing about it is, it is amazing how we keep hearing about all these young guys and these young bucks and, you know, the young players and the young prospects and all this other stuff. And then what happens? They disappear and we never hear from them again. And it's on to the next group of young guys and the next group of young prospects. It's kind of disheartening. It really is. And what's more disheartening is that the some of the people that you're talking about, they don't want to cover it fairly. They don't want to be objective about it. They want it to all be these positive spins. And I get it. Greg Brown, that's his job. He gets paid to do that. I don't have any problem with it. I think people that yell about Greg Brown being a homer don't understand what his job is and who pays his check. You know what I mean? And who pays his bills. So, yes, he's going to be a homer, and he should. But some of these other prospect sites, some of these other people that act like they, you know, follow the young bucks and they follow the prospects and they've been the farm teams and all that other stuff. And they scold you when you suggest that maybe a guy hitting a double once every 2 weeks doesn't mean he's ready for the Hall of Fame, right? They scold you for that.
But so you, they say you're impatient. And right. you just got to wait a little bit longer and this guy's going to be great. And it's, I mean, how many guys has this happened with under Ben Cherington, right? Where it's just unceremonious. There's no acknowledgement by a lot of these people that this happens all the time.
Right.
Like these guys that get built up and you know, it doesn't feel much different than the one that happened under Neil Huntington. And that's not to say that, you know, there aren't good things happening in the offseason or that you should have kept this guy on the roster. It's just, When things don't pan out, there's got to be some level of accountability, and these hushed tones that people speak in whenever one of these prospects doesn't work out. And to me, Paul, here's why this is relevant, because we've been sitting here for 2 months waiting for them to make a big trade for a pitcher. Because okay, you're not going to go out and sign Blake Snell, so you're not going to go out and sign these big contracts. You're going to balk at the money anytime anyone points out the free agent contracts that you could have signed. So like, why don't you trade guys like this, right? How many times have these guys I've heard people on Twitter say, you can't trade him. You can't trade Kenan Smith and Jigba. He's part of the future. No, he's not. And isn't that like part of the problem here is that there's such a hesitant, it's like, I call them prospect fetishists. It's like, they want to keep every prospect in the system and never use them to go get proven good players because, and there's always going to be a risk. Sure. Maybe Kenan Smith and Jigwa goes and turns into a good player himself, but he's not right now. And he's not developed that way. And he's a lottery ticket, I think, to ever do that. Is it not frustrating that it's been 2 months, they haven't made a move? And it's in part because Bob Nutting told Jason Mackey when he was down to the Dominican Republic that he doesn't want to repeat the Chris Archer mistake.
Right, because they made one mistake. And frankly, it was a mistake. I mean, the bottom line, if you are afraid to make a mistake, then you should sell the team at the end of the day. But my thing is, Adam, you said it. I couldn't have said it better than what you just said. This group of people who are so hell-bent on holding on to every prospect in the system, even guys that are in like single A, who if they become really good, aren't going to become for like 4 years from now. You know what I mean? We'll see them at the major league level, right? The whole point of a prospect is twofold. Now, you don't want to be reckless and just give them away. You're not suggesting that. I'm not suggesting that. You don't want to be reckless and just throw them all. But at the end of the day, the entire premise is you want to make your major league team better. Whether that's through developing that prospect to the point where they become a really good major league player for you, or spinning that prospect into somebody who already has proven they're a good player. And to me, the Pirates are so hesitant and always have been really to trade these guys for real players when they've had opportunities that it's frustrating. It's just so frustrating. It's also frustrating that you see other teams that have 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds and 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, you know what I mean, playing. And with the Pirates, you know, well, we got to have 7,561 innings of minor league ball before we move them up. And then we've got to worry about the Super 2 thing. And then we've got to – no. You know, here's my thing. And here's a great test for us, for guys like you and I, Adam. If Paul Skenes proves – in spring training, he's one of their five best starting pitchers, or even better, because a lot of really good pitchers have started this way. He's one of your seven best relievers, right? He should be on the roster immediately. I mean, what are you waiting? What is he, 23, 24 years old now, whatever he is, right? What are you waiting for?
You have him till he's 30 anyway.
What's that?
You'd have him till he's 30 anyway.
Exactly. I don't want to hear about service time and all this other crap because, you know, the other the thing about that, Adam, is how many of those guys actually make it?
No one. I did an article on this, Paul. Yeah. None of these guys we've ever talked about has ever played on the last year of arbitration. I know, okay, you have that extra year of control, so it helps in the trade market, and so it's in theory an asset, but no one, Paul, has ever played that season for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Not one who's mattered. Maybe you have like a Garrett Jones type guy. Not a single one of those guys has ever gotten that far with the Pirates. They either get an extension, they stay here forever or for a long time, or they get traded. So if that's the outcome anyway, Paul, it just moves the timeline up a year and you're trying to compete, try to compete. And I think this is one last part of my rant with the Chris Archer trade is the problem with that trade was not what they gave up. The problem was what they got. And if Chris Archer had come in here and pitched them into those 2018 playoffs and before, you know, the Pirates have gone into 5 years of hell since then, and he gets them into the playoffs and they get to like an NLCS, maybe they pull a Diamondbacks, maybe they get to the World Series. It does not matter what Tyler Glasnow did in Tampa Bay. It does not matter what Austin Meadows did in Tampa Bay. It does not matter what Shane Baez did in Tampa Bay. The problem was the trade didn't work. It wasn't that you gave up prospects.
Right. And it didn't work because you probably took a pitcher that if you talk to people around baseball, they kind of thought that he was exactly what the Pirates got. So you like you said, you got the wrong guy back. But again, back to my original point here. If Paul Skenes is one of your 12 best pitchers and is not on the staff from day one, I don't want to hear the rest. I don't want to hear all of the rationalizations. I don't want to hear about service time. I don't want to hear about, well, he needs X amount of innings and all the other crap. You basically are not giving your team the best chance to win. That's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the state of the ACC. Pitt has been playing a little bit better lately, got a nice win last night at the Pete's, comes back, beats Wake Forest. But the state of the conference is such, Paul, that we talked about this a little bit last week. Even if Pitt runs the table, I mean, are they in a dire strait to make March Madness just because they're not going to get a lot of quality wins from this cushy bottom of the league?
Well, they've got six. What do they got? Six ACC losses.
Mm-hmm.
I think they still have to go back down to Wake Forest, if I'm not mistaken. They've got a couple of other games that are going to be tough. Put it this way. It's the ACC. They're probably going to lose two or three games more down the road. Okay? Maybe two, even if it's only two, but if it's three, I look at their profile and I say they did nothing in the non-conference part of the schedule. And they're not going to get help from the conference part of the schedule. Last I looked, there were three ACC teams right now, you know, and all these bracketology people, all these bracketology, there are three ACC teams right now that are considered to be a part of the NCAA tournament field. And a fourth, I think it might be like Virginia, who's like the last four out or whatever, first four out or whatever in that, you know, in that group like that. But to me, and actually, didn't Clemson just lose? Did they lose a game? I think Clemson just lost a game. They might be on the outside looking in, too. It might be a two-bid league. At the end of the day, they put the league together to be a 10, a 9, a 10, 8, 9, 10 league, bid league. And it's amazing. But all of the teams they brought in that were supposed to improve the basketball product and, you know, stamp the ACC as the greatest, right? Pitt. They've really not been good. One good year in the ACC. Syracuse, no. One good year in the ACC. I mean, I guess they got a Final Four, but they made a run to the Final Four, but they've been a 10, 11, 12 loss team for the most part. If you look at their ACC record, they've been mediocre. Notre Dame fell off. Louisville fell off, right? So the guys you brought in from the Big East haven't helped. Duke and North Carolina had their two Hall of Fame coaches retire. I mean, the league is really in trouble right now.
Well, and it's, you know, it's funny, Paul, is that there doesn't seem to be a reckoning with that, because you turn on the ACC network last night. I was watching the halftime show and they had some guy on complaining about the lack of respect. I mean, respect is earned, right? And their sense that this is just like a popularity contest of who gets into the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's farcical. How many different, you know, it's become, you want to talk about analytics in sports. They have so many different ways to break this down. It's not like Joe Lunardi's dreaming up that these teams are not very good.
But more importantly, they didn't beat anybody in their non-conference schedule. They have very few good wins in their non-conference schedule. The league, I mean. The league has very few good wins in the non-conference schedule. So how can you make the case that they're getting, you know, that they're overlooked and they're underrated and, you know, they're no respect? You've got to go win games. Pitt played basically two good teams in the non-conference and they lost both games. You know, the rest were all okay, yeah, whatever, meh kind of games. But they basically played two games against reasonably good teams that could help their resume, and they lost them both, you know. And there's a number of games like that that the league lost that they shouldn't have lost. And so the conference needs to get back to figuring out how to build these basketball programs back up, you know, because right now the league is full of a lot of teams. They're right now this year, you've got North Carolina, maybe a little bit below them, Duke. A significant gap to like Clemson and Virginia. And then the rest of the league outside of Louisville is all the same. And then Louisville's terrible. So my point is, you've got, you know, Notre Dame probably is bordering on terrible too. So you've got basically two terrible teams and then a bunch of just sort of mediocre teams. It really didn't do a whole lot to enhance their resume. I'm just not sure where the power is supposed to come from if you're a Pitt fan.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll ever be fixed, Paul. And I think that's, you know, we're talking about the conference realignment and the vulture circling and the Scranton rights and the Florida State lawsuit and all of that. And, you know, I think it has to be part of the conversation that, you know, basketball doesn't drive this stuff, but I think it is relevant that the ACC is not a basketball league right now.
Right. And I think one thing, like just real quickly, you know, you lose Roy Williams, Coach K, Boeheim, who, you know, his program had become mediocre for the most part anyway, but because he was Boeheim, it commanded a presence and they would get into the tournament even when they didn't deserve to. And then you've got Rick Pitino. I mean, you had four Hall of Fame coaches and are all gone, right? Now, I mean, and Mike Bray wasn't a Hall of Fame coach, but he had been around a long time and won a lot of games and had built a reasonable program, but they fell off.
Hall of very good.
Yeah. Basically,
and I put Jamie Dixon in that cat. Jamie Dixon's a Hall of Very Good, don't you think?
You Hall of Very Good, Jamie Dixon. That's right. You forgot about, you lost him. I mean, right now you're looking at Tony Bennett as a Hall of Fame coach. I actually think Larrañaga probably should be a Hall of Fame coach, but he's come along. You know, he's gone a long circular route to do it, and probably Leonard Hamilton too. But my point is, you look at the coaches that they've got now. I mean, you know, Leonard Hamilton and Larrañaga aren't exactly monster personality types like Pitino and Boeheim and those guys, right? And neither is Tony Bennett. They're three really good coaches that probably are all going to be in the Hall of Fame, but you don't have that power that you had at the top, and that's a part of the problem.
Yeah, you're not putting Jim Larrañaga in, like, Geico ads. You know, that's not a slight on him. It's people like you and me who do this for a living and people who follow the ACC closely know he's a good coach, but – you know, he's not a household name. He's not someone that, you know, that moves the needle to the general populace. And that's important. That's important when you're in college basketball because there's so many teams and you have to stick out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the part. And then they don't have the power. They don't have those power coaches anymore in the league right now, you know, and that's part of the problem. And even Virginia's not been, you know, they had their one miracle year, but for the most part, they haven't been, you know, that team that, you know, shuts everybody down and, you know, wins. And, you know, they haven't really been that team the last two or three years either.
Yeah, yeah. And you haven't, I mean, talk about the player quality, right? I mean, there's not – how many household names are coming out of the ACC in terms of the roster? You know, even Duke, I mean, what is this? The Filipowski kid who's been there for 3 years? He's not Zion Williamson. He's not, you know, some of these, like, transcendent guys that did the one and done. I mean, the quality of the talent is certainly down as well. But Paul, I'm going to let you go. This was a quality conversation. Really appreciate you joining. If you enjoyed this video, please like it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm. Please stay tuned later in the week. We're going to have Christopher Carter on the North Shore Drive on Friday. I'm sure talking more about Arthur Smith and where the Steelers go from here. I'll be back on Saturday, I think, with either Ray Fittipaldo from the Senior Bowl or Chris to talk about the NFL draft. Our latest mock draft tracker video will be up. And then Paul and I will be back next Thursday talking all the topics that we find interesting in Pittsburgh sports. Paul, thanks for stopping by. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, man. We'll talk to you. Thanks, man.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.